Are you ready to transform your financial future through mortgage note investing? Hi, I'm Jamie Bateman, host of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. As a passionate entrepreneur myself and real estate investor myself, I've dedicated my career to empowering investors like you. Join my mentorship program tailored to meet your unique business objectives with a very small financial commitment to get started. Gain access to my personal experience, trusted consultants and vendors, and receive customized mentoring services. You'll get hands-on guidance on everything from determining your buy box and reviewing your bidding processes to managing notes with third-party servicers, handling collateral, and much more. Don't wait. Visit LabradorLending.com to start your journey to abundance today. Let's unlock your full potential together. If you are working a W-2 and considering becoming a real estate entrepreneur, this episode is for you. If you are a real estate entrepreneur, this episode is for you. Mark Passarelli is a friend of mine. I've known him for well over a decade. And we walked through his story of becoming, going from a W-2 employee, a contractor. When I say contractor, he was a carpenter and worked for a home remodeling company. And going from that to becoming a real estate entrepreneur and how he decided to take the leap. And we talked through toward the end how he lost $40,000 on a deal, which was a huge chunk of money for him. It still is a good chunk of money for him. And but we talk about how his faith was critical in getting through that time and how God really showed up for him. Earlier in the episode, we talk about a 5-year period of darkness and, I guess, rebellion, you could say, how he strayed from his faith. So faith is a critical element of this episode for sure. Toward the very end, at the very end, we talk about some tricks to get mental fitness in check and some things that Mark does on a regular basis to really keep himself motivated, keep himself healthy from a mental standpoint, and how he's been able to weather the storms that inevitably come along with real estate entrepreneurship. We talk about, you know, how the family life plays into things and how it's not just about, you know, your real estate deal and your professional life. We really get a glimpse behind the scenes as to, you know, what it might look like for somebody who quits their W-2, doesn't have a ton of income, doesn't have a ton of savings, and takes that leap to go out on their own. Mark's in the Maryland flipping and rental property space. He's somebody that adds value in every conversation, wants to add value in every deal. And just a really good person, very relatable, person. And this is a very relatable episode that you're going to really enjoy.
Welcome to From Adversity to Abundance, the go-to podcast for real estate entrepreneurs seeking not just to thrive, but to conquer with resilience and mental sharpness. Each week, join us as we dive into the compelling world of real estate through the lens of mental fitness, where challenges transform into opportunities. Get ready to transform your mindset and expand your understanding of what it takes to succeed in real estate. Let's explore these stories of triumph and resilience together.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm thrilled today to have with us a friend of mine, Mark Passarelli. Mark, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Jamie. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Mark is an entrepreneur. He's a real estate investor, the owner of Phoenix Estates. And Mark used to be in my house quite a bit working on our home. This was, I can't believe it's been almost 10 years since we, you were essentially remodeling like half of my house, which was awesome. But
it was probably the worst experience of your life, right? Seeing me every day.
Right. It was awful. I've tried to, yeah, that's why I forgot about it. I've just pushed it out of my memory.
Yeah.
No, actually those were good times, but Mark, how are you doing today? And what are you up to today?
Good. Yeah. Doing well. So as Jamie mentioned, I'm a real estate investor. So currently investing in buy and hold properties, doing some flips, and just started doing some wholesales as well. So that's kind of what I'm getting into is the real estate field. Been doing it for about 4 years and really enjoying it. It's given me a lot of freedom and kind of allowed me to pursue things that I wanted to pursue.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive in because as we briefly touched on before we hit record, I've got some real gaps in my knowledge about your story. And you know, if you see those like somebody goes on a, well, I know you've lost weight as well, but if somebody does a diet and that you see like the before and after pictures, it's like, wow. Because I have not been plugged into every detail of your journey as much as I'm sure you would have loved that. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. It's just when you sent me kind of an update with your bio, and I was like, wow, like I had no idea that you have 20 some rental properties and you've done all these flips and everything. And like, what have I been doing this whole time? but no, it's really impressive, you know, just from my vantage point. And I know we're going to get into more detail here, but it's very impressive just seeing, you know, quite honestly, you were the guy working on my house, and I'm not trying to put that down and put you know, in any way. And now it's like, you're a legit real estate investor. So not that you didn't have value then, but it's just impressive what what you've been able to accomplish. And I know it hasn't been easy, and we're going to dive into some of the adversity that you've been through. So before we jump into your backstory right now, say in the next month, what's your focus, professionally?
Yeah. So, right now we're working on a bunch of rental properties, that we purchased, and we can dive more into this, you know, in detail later, but essentially we're doing the burst strategy, right? So, we're buying them at a discounted price, adding value through the rehab process, and then, kind of refinancing out of them. So, we have numerous properties that we're working on right now. And so nice. For the next month, you know, the goal would be to kind of close out those deals and get some more flips going. Because the flips actually this year haven't done as many flips as we wanted to, but we've done more rental properties than we've wanted to. So kind of like averages itself out.
I'm curious to dive in later on how the BRRRR strategy has still been working given today's market conditions too. you know, because I've done that as well. And I think generally speaking, it's not as easy to do right now. I'd say real estate investing is not as easy to do as it was 5-10 years ago. So obviously you've got to be good to continue to be profitable and productive. So I can't wait to jump in and figure out how like the mindset around kind of deciding when to work, you know, leave your job. Essentially you were working for somebody else and then you weren't, and that's a big decision and a big transition. But before we get there, let's jump into your backstory a little bit. Where do you want to start?
I think we'll just start at the beginning, right? So I wanted to talk about my faith a lot as well, because it's something that's really important to me. So grew up in a Christian family, Christian home, always, you know, going to church, doing all those types of things. I think I accepted Jesus into my heart when I was pretty young, like 4 or 5. Right. Mm-hmm. And you kind of go, almost like go with the flow, right. Mm-hmm. With your family, right. Your parents, not that they force you to go to church, but it's just, you're going to church because your family is going, right? It's,
and you're kind of going through the motions.
Right. Right.
You haven't, you haven't researched as a 5-year-old, like you haven't researched like Islam and any other religion exactly, out there. So
you kind of just follow in your parents' footsteps. Right.
Sure.
And that's, I feel like how my faith was growing up. And then at some point, you have to turn your parents' faith into your own, right? Like, and whether that's when you go off to college or whatever, you move out of the house, like your parents aren't forcing you to go to church anymore, right? You have to decide to make that step yourself. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because that's a little bit later on, but let me just kind of go through my journey. So, and this kind of relates to the real estate, the, some of my background. I started getting interested, honestly, in construction and real estate type stuff when I was pretty young. We had an addition put on my parents' house. It was an in-law suite. And I think I was, I don't know, 11, 12 maybe. And I just was fascinated watching the process and seeing like the different phases and, you know, watching the framing go up. And because it was at our house, right? I got to see the whole process. And that was just such an intriguing experience for me. And so I think that kind of started the gears turning in my head, like how, you know, how can I do this type of stuff? I've always been kind of an active guy. I've always liked working with my hands, been an athlete, right? I'm not like a sit at your desk type of guy, which is oddly enough what I do mostly now. Yeah.
Right.
So got involved in, I think when I was 16 years old, I started working at a construction company, remodeling company. We installed kitchens.
I mean, Jesus was a carpenter. I'm just, hey, just, that's right. Just saying,
just,
right?
Just trying to follow in his footsteps, man. So, and we actually, for that company, we worked on a house that the guy who owned the company, he was flipping in Baltimore City. I have no clue. He could have made $100,000 or lost 20 grand. I have no clue.
Right.
What I do know is I was like, man, this is awesome. Like I don't have to work for a client, right? It's, we have free access to the house. Cause in home renovations, it's tough sometimes working with clients. Not that they're tough people. I mean, there are tough clients, right?
Sure.
But you have to work around them and you know, their schedule and all that type of stuff. So that part of the house flipping intrigued me early on.
Yeah, because it's a vacant property. That's an investment property.
Yeah, you could work at 10 p.m. if you wanted, you know, as long as you're not
making too much noise.
Yeah, bothering the neighbors, right?
Yeah.
So, but I never really took the action to make those steps happen to like get into the real estate field. And this is kind of where some of the mindset stuff comes into play, right? I realized, you know, I don't know, 8 years ago or something, that I am just a life procrastinator. And what I mean by that is just everything I do, it's like, oh, I can do that tomorrow. Like, I'll do that later. I'll do that later. And that's how I was like my whole life, right? And it kind of affected my grades in school and things like that. Like I was like, oh, I'll, you know, I'll do that later. And then the next thing you know, I have to write a 10-page paper in, you know, one night. Right. And it's like, you got to cram it in. And so I had to shift my mindset at some point. And that happens kind of later on in my story. But kind of worked for construction companies off and on throughout, you know, my early adulthood. I actually have a college degree in cybersecurity, and it is collecting dust on my shelf the entire time.
That's right. I think I remember when you were doing that, I think.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where it took me 8 years to get the degree, just because, like I said, I didn't care about the classes, you know, I wasn't doing well. I was taking off semesters, going back, and I felt like, I was kind of trying to follow in the footsteps of my brother, my older brother. He's 7 years older than I am, and he's a computer engineer. And I'm like, oh man, like I got to do that because I look up to him and all that. And then,
yeah,
I finally realized that, like, that's just not me. I got to pursue what I want to do, right?
Well, and so just I like, and because I observed you. I mean, you were the main person, honestly, consistently working in our house, and that's a small, you know, window into your life, but what I observed is you were always on time, always working hard. So I don't want the listener to get the impression that you're saying you were lazy, like from a day-to-day physical standpoint, but and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm gathering is maybe from a strategy or life, like big picture intentionality type thing, like who am I really, what skills, you know, what's my mission here, what's my purpose, yeah. maybe that was, you were avoiding that and pushing that off. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've always been a really hard worker. Like when I'm doing something, it's like I try to put my all into it.
Yeah.
But I think I just lacked the mental, you know, like savvy of like how, you know, how can I improve my life, or how can I, what do I actually want? It's just you just kind of going with the flow.
Well, and as much as I want to be, you know, pile on and beat you up. No, I'm kidding. But I think that's super common, right? It's pretty, I think a lot of our listeners can relate to that. So it makes sense.
So kind of working through my life, right? I'm 16. I was a carpenter, moving into like my early 20s. I went through a period where like I stopped going to church probably for about 5 years. And I just wasn't following Jesus. Like to me, like as a Christian, like my sole purpose is to follow Jesus and to trust in him as my savior, right? I'm a sinner. I need to follow Jesus. I need to put my faith in him that he is my savior, right? And I still think I knew those things and I still believed those things, but I wasn't like, if you looked at my life, you would have said like, this guy's not doing what he believes in. Right. I was living out, you know, on my own with a couple other guys who were drinking, smoking weed, like every day, like just doing all these like crazy things. Right. And I won't dive like too much into that, but it's, you know, it was an issue. Right. I was addicted to weed. Like I felt like I had to smoke every single day to get through. It's not like a physical addiction. It's like a mental addiction type thing. Right. Like a
dependency.
Yeah. And so I think that was part of what affected, my mindset of like, you know, I'm just smoking and having a good time. Right.
Sure. It was a short term day to day.
Yeah.
Yep. Mindset.
And then sort of in my later 20s, I came back to the church, and kind of rededicated my faith in Jesus and kind of stopped all that type of stuff. I'm not thankful.
What do you think was the change? Like why the, 'cause I think it's easy to go drift away. So yeah. I'm not quite as interested in why that happened, but why did you come back?
I just always knew that it wasn't right. Like, so that as a Christian, you believe in like the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit works in your heart. And I constantly felt this tug on my heart, like, hey, tension. What are you doing? Like, let's go here. And I just was kind of, it's like I said, I'm a procrastinator. I was like, you know what? I can go back to church tomorrow. You know, I'm still a Christian.
Sure.
But I'm just going to put that off. I don't feel like doing that right now, you know?
Right.
And well,
your sins are forgiven, right? So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's how it works, right? Like,
sure,
like God forgives all of our sins through Jesus,
right.
But it's you can't just say, oh, my sins are forgiven, let me go, you know, do all these crazy things, right?
Yeah, that's something that gets left out these days is the repentance side of things. But I'll stay off my soapbox for now.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing that I attribute it to, so I, my brother was a missionary, and he ended up coming back to the States, for good. And he invited me to come play soccer. Soccer is one of my greatest passions in life.
Uh-huh.
I still play today.
Nice.
Played all through high school. I played 1 year in college at just a community college. It was no big deal, but nothing like your story.
Still impressive though.
Yeah. So he invited me to come play soccer with this young adults group at the church. And I started, you know, playing soccer, and then I started going to the church where the young adults were from, and that's kind of how I came back.
Gotcha.
I think I felt for a while like I wouldn't be accepted because of I knew the things that I had been doing, right? But that's a false reality that we try to maybe that was just an excuse, like, hey, I'm not gonna be accepted, I'm not gonna go back to church, right? But I felt accepted in this group, and so I felt like, hey, I'm gonna go back to church and see how it is. And it's it's been like, I feel like my faith is so much stronger and different now than it was prior to this, just mm-hmm. because I went through this time of darkness. It helped me realize my actual need for Jesus. A lot of times, so what, if you,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, a lot of times if you grow up in a Christian home and you don't have a period of darkness, you kind of just, like I said, go with the flow, right?
Yeah, you take it
but
for
granted. I realized in my own mind how much I needed him.
Yeah, gotcha. So, what, approximately what year was this that we're talking about that you kind of returned to the faith?
Probably about 8 years ago.
Okay, that's
so,
got it.
Yeah.
Got it. So you were working on my house.
I was probably
that.
Working on your house. Yeah.
It's, hey, I wasn't smoking
on the job. I wasn't
on
the job. Only after.
Gotcha. No. So, and look, yeah, I just did a 10-week small group at my church called Rooted. I think it's a national program, but I mean, some of the, you know, not that you want to get into comparing too much, but some of the stories that I think we all have this kind of natural, like, oh, I'm not good enough. Everybody in the group's going to know more of the Bible than I do, or something along those lines of, I don't measure up, or I've done too many bad things to be accepted. And then, man, once you get to know like these other guys in the group I was in, wow, it's like some of the stuff they've been through or have chosen to do. And again, I'm not minimizing things I've done or anything, but it's just like, okay, we've all fallen short, right?
Yep.
So that's really comforting once you realize that nobody can really throw the first stone, right?
And something I relate to, like your podcast, From Adversity to Abundance, is, you know, I went from this time where I had, so two of the friends that I was hanging out with at that time have passed away from drug overdoses.
Wow.
And like, to think that like that could have been me, right?
Yeah.
Now they were, you know, involved in some other crazier stuff that I was never really involved in.
Sure.
But I could have easily,
you could have gone down that path.
Gone down that path. And, you know, it's just something I think about, you know. It's like, to go from like this dark time in my place where I could have, you know, died maybe, right, to where I am today. And I still have, you know, I still have a ton of room to grow, right, in my faith,
for sure,
in my business, you know, in being a good spouse, and father, like all those areas I still need to grow in. Mm-hmm. But it's good to look back and look where you came from, because
for sure,
it's like, man, look where I was and look where I am now, you know.
Yeah, well, I haven't read the book The Gap and the Gain. I should.
Oh, but
I've read
it
a
is,
couple.
It is a great book.
Okay,
great,
well,
book. I just recently read it like a couple months ago.
Awesome. That's just what popped in my head when you just talked about that. Looking back and appreciating how far you have come and how much growth has been accomplished, if you will, is important. And I know as entrepreneurs, it's very easy not to do that. It's very easy to just look forward, you know, and just the next deal. Okay, so let's cover the last 8 years, both from like a mental fitness standpoint and an actual real estate investing standpoint. First, how did you decide to quit your job? What did that look like?
Yeah, it was, so right when COVID started, I was working for a remodeling company, and we had a furlough. I don't know, it was maybe 8 weeks or something. And it gave me a lot of time to think about what I wanted, right? And I had a lot of free time to kind of do some research.
Sure.
About a year or so prior to this happening, I had been listening to podcasts, like Bigger Pockets was a big one that I started listening to, and started reading a lot of books. And I'll be honest with you, prior to me like listening to Bigger Pockets, I don't know the last book, or if I ever read a book for pleasure or for like to gain knowledge.
It by was choice, like, right?
Yeah, hey, you have to read this book for school. And I'm going to cliff note it and barely read it anyway. Right. So like that is me. And I think, I mean, part of it was because like I always struggled with reading, like my reading comprehension was never the greatest. And so I would read something and then a page later, I'm like, I have no clue what I just read. And so it's like, why should I read? I'm not going to understand this stuff.
Sure.
But on Bigger Pockets, they always talk about, they always ask each guest, or they used to, I don't know if they still do,
yeah,
but
I don't know either.
You know, what are your top three books that you like to read? And one of the ones that I kept hearing was Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Sure.
That was the first book that I had read. And I it like blew my mind just to think differently, right? Like how I had been thinking about assets and liabilities and just a different mindset of thinking.
Yeah.
And so after I read that book, I just started reading all these other books and listening to podcasts and stuff. And I was trying to just gain as much knowledge as I could before making the jump into real estate. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's, I had a similar, you know, might've been a little bit earlier, but of course I'm a little bit older than you too. Similar thing where it's just a mindset shift, and it's just like you surround yourself, you know, it's not like just changing your thoughts by itself can just make you wealthy overnight or something like that, or just create success instantly. Of course, that's kind of ridiculous, but I mean, but it's amazing how your thoughts do lead to your actions and your behaviors and your habits, which is really what ends up producing results. So I know we're going to get there, but I had a similar kind of, I guess, mental transition in around 2014, probably when you were working at our house, but 2014, 2015 is when I really started getting serious about listening to Bigger Pockets podcasts, different podcasts and reading books. And it just, the mental shift that it creates for you when you change your thought environment is, you can't be overemphasized. It's just so valuable.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people like who don't do that type of stuff, it's kind of bogus, like, oh, you know, your mindset. But it's, I mean, it is so true. Obviously, you still have to take action, right? You can't just have this great mindset and all of a sudden things are going to start happening, right?
Right.
But it's like, it's, I don't know, I don't remember who said the quote. It's like, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
You're probably right.
You
know?
Yeah. So it's like, you have, and I think some of it's a confidence thing too, right? Confidence is a huge momentum builder.
It's huge
in my opinion. In anything, for sure. In sports, in you know, business, it's a great mindset tool.
Yep, for sure. And I know for me, I switched to I stopped, and it's easy. Like this isn't. I still fall into the negative mindset stuff. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm I'm perfect with this. But I definitely had an intentional shift toward, wait a minute, what are my strengths? Who's on my team? Okay, my father has been a real estate agent for decades. I used to work for a title company and a mortgage broker. I never considered that a real strength, right? Or valuable experience. You know, all these things, you just start looking at your network and who's on my side. What resources do I have? And it does create a shift toward the positive and toward confidence of maybe I can do this first deal, you know, something like that, as opposed to, oh, I have to work this full-time job and I don't have time, or, you know, it's just a mental shift, which is really powerful. So you started listening to all these podcasts, reading books. For me, Cash Flow Quadrant was actually more powerful. I liked Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it is definitely a mental, like, it encourages you to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked getting into the kind of the difference between an entrepreneur, self-employed business owner, investor, and employee, I think are the four in his other
book.
Book
as well. Yep.
So take it from there. What, you know, how did that kind of the education and intention of get soaking up all this real estate investing knowledge, how did that eventually turn into you quitting your job and maybe doing your first deal?
Yeah. So early 20, when did COVID hit? 2020. So early 2020. Yeah. I was up late, like, you know, researching stuff and kind of trying to figure things out. And I just pulled the trigger. I was like, I'm gonna start an LLC. And I don't advise like making big life decisions without consulting your spouse. Like, and my wife has been absolutely amazing, like biggest support of mine. You know, because it hasn't been easy on her either, the transition. Like, it doesn't just affect me, right? It affects her and our whole family.
Yeah.
But I woke up the next day. I was like, hey, I created an LLC. She's like, you did what? Like, what? What's going on here? I mean, she was on board, but it just was like a surprise to her. But
sure.
I just was sick of not taking action, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge thing, is the analysis paralysis. You can think about something so much that you overanalyze and you just don't take the action. Now, I'm not saying just do things without thinking about it, right? But you can only think about something so long, and then you just have to do it, and you're going to make mistakes, right? But that's how you learn. You're going to figure it out, right? So I started this LLC, and I think something that's interesting, and for anybody who's not an entrepreneur yet or is like trying to get started, you don't have to have any money to start stuff. Like, I literally had no money to start the business. Like, we had money, right? But I didn't want to use like our savings or anything. I just wanted to try to get it started. So I had an agreement with my wife. I was like, all right, I'll figure out how to get the money to start the LLC and the business on my own. So I took a bunch of old Pokemon cards and video games and sold them on eBay and made enough money. I think it was like $1,500 or $2,000 to kind of like start the LLC and get things going. And so I just want to, I don't want new entrepreneurs to like be like, oh, I don't have any money. Like, how am I going to get this started? Just figure it out, and that's what I did. Right. So I bought my first property in 2020. I think May or something. I'm not sure. We also had a baby like right around that time. So there was a lot of stuff going on. Well, okay?
Especially with COVID, there's a lot going on.
Right. So we got COVID, right?
Yeah.
We have no help from our family. Because, it's like we couldn't really see each other. We have a new baby. I'm trying to start this business. I'm still working a full W-2 job, right? And I was trying to do all of that at once. And I felt like I just wasn't doing a good job at anything, because it's like I had too much stuff going on, right? Like, I wasn't home very much. I wasn't helpful to my wife and the kid. I was going to my W-2 job, but I wasn't fully mentally there, because I was also trying to do this flip at the same time, right? And so I think maybe in September, I realized I have to quit. Like, I cannot do both at the same time. And I just took that leap of faith, which was tough. It was really tough. My wife was working at the time, so it made it a little bit easier, right? So because when you go into real estate, if you're going to flip a house or anything, right?
Yeah.
You don't have a paycheck for however long that first flip takes, right? And so I don't think I paid myself for the first 5 months that I started it. But it did help out that my wife was still working. Right? So, yeah. It was definitely tough.
Can you say who you were working for?
I can. Do you want me to?
Sure.
Smith House.
Yeah, so we had Dave Smith on a prior episode for the listener to go check that one out.
Great company.
But I think it's great company. They do fantastic work in Maryland, custom high-end remodeling. And I think maybe some ground up construction, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think it's cool that and obviously you can speak more to this than I can, but you had exposure to the investment side of things before, and now even if Dave isn't specifically in real estate investing, their company, I mean, he built that from scratch. And I know you were a big part of the growth of that, his company. So I just think from an entrepreneurship standpoint, you got to see some of the ups and downs and the pain points and the successes of Smith House and the growth they've had. So I'm sure that benefited you as well. So people say, well, don't quit your job. And there's no one size fits all, right? We know that everybody's situation is different, but people say, well, wait till you have enough you know, income that matches your W-2 income from your side hustle before you quit. We know what you actually did, but what would you say to that about that guidance?
Yeah, I would just say sometimes I think people use stuff like that as an excuse because they're just afraid, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if you say, I need to get to this before I do this, that can hold you back, right?
Yeah.
So it is going to be, it's going to be a risk, right? There's, I mean, it's, to me, it's kind of like a slightly high risk, but even higher reward. You're going to, you might have to take a step back, right? So I would say if you have some reserves in the bank, right, for 3, 4, 5 months worth of living, right, can you afford, or can you stomach to not have a paycheck for that amount of time, knowing that you're going to come out on the other end and start to rise, right? You almost, you're investing in yourself, right? So you got to believe in yourself.
You're betting on yourself. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's kind of the mindset thing too, is you have to, if you don't believe in yourself, why should anybody else believe in you that you can do it? Right. So you, you have to, I mean, don't be arrogant about it. Right. But like, you have to have this mindset of, I'm going to get this done no matter what. And to me, it was like, I'm willing to do anything I have to do because I know it falls on my shoulders to provide for my family. There's nothing that I'm not willing to do. Like, I will never go back to a W-2 job, even if my like real estate career like failed, not because I didn't, you know, I mean, my employer was great, right? But like, it's the freedom and the ability to kind of build my own thing that I was looking for. It was definitely hard early on. It put some stress on our family, on our marriage, just because I wasn't there as much as I wanted to be. So, you know, that was tough. That was probably one of the hardest things. But now,
as far as
I'm able to be home more than I was before.
Yeah, that's awesome. And when people talk about that income, matching your income thing, I just always think, well, okay, if you're matching, let's say, Mark, you were making $75,000 working for Smith House. Obviously, I'm just making numbers up.
How
but
did you know?
I had no idea. Dave always sends me everyone's paycheck. No.
Yeah, right.
It was just a guess. But, you know, and then you're making $75,000 consistently through your flips. I know that's like nothing's consistent with flipping. But, and then you quit your W-2. Well, you still lost $75,000 in income. So you're still like taking a big cut when you quit your W-2. So no matter what, it's like, it's not like it's just, oh, you feel no pain when you quit your W-2 from an income standpoint. So the point is, there's never a perfect time to do it. And I am not sitting here saying everyone should immediately quit your jobs and go jump into entrepreneurship.
That would be silly.
Trust me, it is not easy, and it absolutely can have an impact on your marriage and your relationships, and can be super stressful, just entrepreneurship in general. So, you know, I like to keep it real on the show, and it's not all rainbows and butterflies and unicorns. And, but I 100% agree with you. I mean, you know, most people are just procrastinating if they think they want to be an entrepreneur and they're not doing it yet. Do it now, or do it in the next year. Set it up in the next year to be able to quit your job if this is really what you want to do, and bet on yourself. And here's the thing. I know you said you'd never work a W-2 again, but let's say it just absolutely failed. Your business was a total failure. And then you tried another one, total failure. Do you think you could get a job like you had before?
Oh, absolutely. And I honestly think like I bring more value to the team now than I did before, right? Because I have a different mindset. I know what it takes to run a business, and that's something that I can always fall back onto, right? And, and so that was my mindset. Like if it fails, if I need to go back, I can. I know several companies that would probably hire me in a heartbeat, right? And so that gives me a little bit of comfort. Yeah.
Even if is what I like to say. Even if this happens, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but there's a, I don't know if it's anybody has this quote, but I heard it on like a motivation. I listen to a lot of like motivational like compilations of people actually on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And the one guy said, if not now, when? Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, now, when is the time? Now is the time. If you really want to be an entrepreneur, figure it out. Don't quit your job today. Right. But sit down now and figure out, like, what is it going to take for me to take those steps? Right. Is it,
sure,
it might be a month from now, it might be 2 months, but like, make that, sit down now and figure out, what are you looking for? It's different for everybody. Right. What you want is different than what I want. So it's going to look differently, but the steps are the same. You got to take action. You got to have a goal in mind of what you're looking for.
Right. Instead of having like, I should quit my job someday mindset.
Yeah.
It's okay. Not today, but okay. I want to do it in 6 months. Okay. Yeah. Then backwards in the military, we had
reverse engineer
backwards. Right. Backwards planning, because we were in the army and that those were more simple terms than reverse engineering. But yeah, you like, okay, then what do I need to accomplish in 5 months? Then what do I need to accomplish in 4 months? And 3, 2, 1, what do I need to do today then? Right. Okay. So your first deal, how did that go? And then I know you had a major loss on a deal at Deep Creek I want to get to. So
exciting. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Let's focus on your losses, right?
Can we not talk about that one? No, I'm just kidding. So I'll kind of dive into a little bit about how I funded it and all that type of stuff. It's 'cause there's a lot of different ways to do things. You know, there's more than one way to skin a cat in terms of real estate.
Now, is this is your first deal that we're talking about?
Yep. Just to So my very first deal, I think purchase price was around $100,000. We bought it off the MLS on an auction site, Hubzu. I had my agent, my good friend was an agent, and we used to like just go look at properties, and this one kind of like fit our criteria. So we bid on it, had to up our bid a little bit, but ended up getting it. Immediately had buyer's remorse. I was like, what am I doing? I'm buying this house. I have no clue what I'm doing. Right. You know, sometimes I still get nervous when I buy a deal. Yeah. It's like, is this going to be good or bad? Who knows? But I had no money. Like I said before, I had like $0 to my name in terms of the business, right? Like, you know, I have my own personal savings or whatever, but $0 in the business right now, because we're just starting. So I'm like, all right, how do I do this? Right. It's not like it's the rich dad, poor dad mindset. Like, oh, I can't do this because I don't have money. Well, I don't have money, so how can I do this? Right. I had another friend who wanted to get into real estate, but was working a full-time job and didn't have time, but he had the cash available. So I coupled his cash. So he funded all of the, it's called like gap funding, right? So when you buy a property, typically a lot of investors or most investors will use what's called hard money. And you pay a premium for the interest, and they charge that upfront fee to use their money. And it's generally more expensive if you've done no deals, right? So, but more deals you get, the less expensive it gets, and it gets easier to come by. But they won't lend on the entire deal. Generally, they'll lend like up to 90% of the purchase price, and then like maybe 100% of the rehab, right? So I have to come with 10% down and pay for closing costs. So I used my friend to and say, hey man, like, you go into this property, you fund all of the money I need, and we'll split the cost 50-50 of the profit, whatever that is. And he was like, all right, let's do it. So, and I did all the work, right? I'm a licensed contractor myself, so I did a lot of the work myself, but I obviously had to sub out like some of the trades and things like that. So halfway through the deal, I was like, okay, this 50-50 split scenario is not going to work in the future. I wasn't going to back out on it now. So I went to him and said, hey, I know this is working now, but in the future, like, this is not going to work. Just because it was a ton of work, right? And
mind you, I want to this was 2020 still, just to paint the picture. So it's like, everything, like, the world was shut down. Like, so just the fact that you're still taking action, I think, is impressive, because it'd be so easy to say, well, let's see how the next year shakes out with market conditions and things. And so just want to point that out, that the fact that you're still moving forward during that time, you know, is just impressive. All right. So you're doing all the work. You bring the sweat equity. He put the money up, and you're supposed to do a 50-50 split of the profits.
So we get to the end, we list the property, and I think I mean, this is when the real estate market like just skyrocketed.
Oh, right. And, right.
You know, everything was going for over asking. I don't remember exactly. I think it was like 20 or 30K over asking, which I almost like fell off my chair when my agent called me and said, oh, we got this offer in. I'm like, oh, wow. Now, we didn't make that much money. I think we only made like 40 grand. So like, had we not got the over asking that we got, mm-hmm. like it wouldn't have been that great of a deal.
Right.
But my mindset was, if I break even on this first deal, like that was my goal. I don't mm-hmm. want to lose money on this first deal. I just yeah. want to get a deal under my belt. If I break even, I've learned the process. I've built some relationships. That was my, you know, bottom line. Mm-hmm. So to walk away with, you know, I guess 20 grand from the sale, like yeah. a little less than 20 grand from it, was huge. Was a huge
absolutely.
Win.
I mean, plus so. You got the education, you started your track record to say, right. hey, I have this successful deal under my belt for the next one, and you made money. I mean, that's win-win-win.
Yeah. Yep. And I still use the same guy as mm-hmm. like a private lender. It's just not an equity-based lending. It's just an interest type thing.
Yeah. It's a loan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how my first deal went, and I was hooked after that. It's like, okay, how do I keep doing this? Now they're obviously, sure. and we'll get into this. They're not all wins, right? Like,
yeah.
sometimes you lose money, but
yeah. But I think that's interesting. An interesting point though is because is the fact that that can, you know, if you'd lost 20 grand on your first deal, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I do think about that. It's like, okay, if you lose 20, 30, 40 grand on your first flip, like that might be it for you, to be honest.
Yeah,
and so I think absolutely. That's what scares a lot of people away, but mm-hmm.
yeah,
you know,
yeah, obviously that's not what happened. So, okay. And then how many deals did you do before you got to this, the deal we're not going to talk about?
I don't know. Maybe another 5 deals or so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just to your goal with all this, your strategy is what? Fix and flip and then peel off some rentals if it makes sense, or what's your approach big picture?
Yeah, big picture is rental portfolio. Like that's big picture. Mm-hmm. I want to have a rental portfolio maybe up to at least 60 rentals, 60 doors. Because mm-hmm. I think that gets me the truly, truly passive net income mm-hmm. that I'm looking for. Now,
yeah.
I say passive, that's a full-time passive, job. But if I'm managing those properties, right. that's a full-time job just to manage 60 rentals, right. right? But where I don't have to look for other deals and it provides mm-hmm. the income that I need.
Yeah.
And that's my long-term retirement, right? Mm-hmm. So in 30 gotcha. Years, I'm 30, I'll be 36 this year, actually tomorrow.
Oh,
I'll be 36. Birthday. Thank you. And so in 30 years, in theory, all of these rentals are going to be paid off, because that's generally what I do, is a 30-year mortgage, 30-year uh-huh. note.
Yeah.
It'd be nicer if we paid them off earlier, right? If we get a lump sum of, you know, cash, like maybe we throw some of that cash at them to kind of pay them down a little bit more. But in theory, in 30 years, like they're all going to be cash flowing a significant amount, right? So that's my retirement. And yeah. I can sell one property probably per year. And yeah. just from the sale of that property, it probably pays for my expenses for that whole year. So that's kind of my mindset of like
yeah,
why I absolutely. Want a rental portfolio, and why I've chosen like 60 doors is kind of like the minimum that I, you know, if I get to 60, I can stop. Mm-hmm. And that's not just like a, hey, I want 60 doors. I've thought through like
right, the process the reason of behind yeah, it.
How much money do I need? How much are they going to bring in? All that stuff.
Sure. And so, but in 2020, you might have been a little more focused on flips because you needed the income.
Correct.
Large chunk of capital that comes in all at once to pay your bills for your yep. for your family.
Yeah. So in 2020, I think I just did that one flip.
Okay.
And then in 2021 is when I started ramping up. Like I think we did like 5 rental properties in 2021.
Nice.
It's hard for me to keep track of like the
yeah.
years. Like it just kind of all
right.
like melds together, right? And then, you know, I think we did like 4 or 5 flips that year. But it's hard for me to remember chronologically sure. what happens like when, but
yeah.
that's kind of the general generosity.
Well, I'm helping you work on your story.
Yeah.
But right. So okay, let's talk about Deep Creek, the deal we're not gonna talk about. Yeah.
Punch.
Adversity to abundance, right?
That's right.
That's the point of the show, is to talk about the real, you know, pain points in some of this stuff. Because if you can't handle, you know, pain points and adversity, you should not be an entrepreneur. Yeah. I mean,
it's an everyday thing.
Absolutely. So, what happened? What was the talk us through the deal, the details on this Deep Creek deal?
Yeah,
Deep Creek, Maryland, for those listening who are not familiar, is a popular vacation spot on a lake in Western Maryland that can be nice in both all seasons, really. So it's yep. pretty, and it's yeah, really
it's
grown a lot.
Ski resort close by. It's got a nice lake.
Yep.
Yeah. So here's the deal. Okay, we bought a property that we turned into an Airbnb. Like, that was the goal. So because mm-hmm. We like the Deep Creek area. We wanted a kind of like a vacation house that we could go to that was also cash flowing. So was like, okay, Deep Creek's a pretty good Airbnb spot. So we bought this house. It was tough to find like contractors and people to work on it, because we're in Baltimore and it's like 3 hours away, right, from where we live.
Yeah.
And so it was just a hard process to find that. But then we finally eventually found the people that, you know, we needed to use, and things were moving and grooving. The property turned out well, air quotes. It appraised for significantly more than what I thought it would. And so if people don't understand the process of like burring, which is the buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat strategy.
Yeah.
The goal is to buy houses under value, add value, and then refinance out of your short-term hard money loan and cash out all of the cash that you've invested, and sometimes more, right? So it appraised for such, and it's all driven on the appraised value, the appraisal after you fix it up drives everything, right?
The ARV, right?
The ARV, yeah. So it appraised for significantly more than what I thought it would. And I was like blown away. I'm like, man, I need to buy all these properties in Deep Creek, because this thing is insane.
What kind of numbers are we talking about?
Yeah, so it appraised, I think we bought it for like $100,000 and maybe put $150,000 into it.
Oh wow.
And it appraised for like $480,000 or something crazy.
Whoa. Wow.
So we cashed out a significant amount of money.
Sure.
After, you know, now those numbers sounds like, oh, it's cost $100,000, you put $150,000 into it. Well, you made like, you know, $200,000. Well, that's not true, because there's a lot of other lender fees and like all these other things. So
holding,
I think
costs.
It was closer. Yeah, holding costs. It was probably closer to like $60,000 or something that we cashed out.
Okay.
So essentially we had this cash flowing Airbnb that we got paid $60,000 essentially.
Yeah.
To own. I mean, it's not like income, but it's because you just have a different loan. So you've leveraged a different loan to basically have a little bit more money.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, wow, this is incredible. I'm gonna start investing heavily in Deep Creek, right? Well, here's the issue, and for any new investors out there, you gotta know your area that you're investing in. I thought I knew it because I had done one deal and I was, you know, puffing my chest out and was like, man, I can do anything up here. Well, come to find out, like, the contract that we had used did not do a good job. And we didn't know this until afterwards, right? Like the kitchen sink was never connected to the main drain, and we had a garbage disposal. So there was like, we were like, what is that smell? Like, we went up there, there was all this food in the crawl space. I'm like, dude, come on.
Wow.
So what happened was, we bought another property up there, because I was like, I need to start heavily investing in Deep Creek. It wasn't as close to the lake. And so the market, like right around the lake, is very good, because that's where investors buy there. Right. But we were maybe, this new property was maybe 10 minutes off the lake, whereas the first property was like right on the lake, right? Totally different market, even though it's like fairly close, right? Like in Baltimore, if you have a house
that's very block by block.
So it's kind of the same thing, whereas it, you know, it might be the same zip code, but it's like totally different value.
My brother has a house in Little Italy, and if you go a little bit northeast, it's extremely different.
So I experienced that, you know, firsthand. So we bought this property, had the same contractor that we worked on before. This was prior to us realizing his quality of work was not great. And we put it on the market. So we finished the rehab, put it on the market, and I think we put it on for like $325,000. And this was back in like September or October or November or sometime towards the winter season. And we had like one showing in several weeks. And this is when the market was like, you know, you get 30 showings in a weekend.
Lots of offers.
And, you know, multiple offers, and you're under contract in less than a week.
Not a good sign.
Yeah, not a good sign. So then we dropped the price by like 25,000. Still not many showings. Dropped the price another 25,000. Still not many showings. So like we dropped it $75,000, right? And we were projecting to make like 50 off of it at our original price. This was the flip that we were working on, just so I'm clear.
Right. Yeah. You still have so the short-term rental that you can use, right? At this point, not today.
Right.
I'm saying
at this point, still had the short-term rental up there. Right.
And you're trying to sell this flip at the same time.
And the short-term rental was going okay. You know, it wasn't cash flowing as much as we wanted, but it was still cash flowing. So we were fine there.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So in my mind, I'm freaking out because I'm like, okay, we might lose. How much are we going to lose on this property? I don't know. How long is it going to sit on the market? It had been on the market at this point, probably 5 months.
Wow.
And we had like maybe six showings and no offers. And I'm just like, okay. And I still haven't done that many deals, and I don't have a ton of capital in the bank to like suffer through like a huge loss.
Sure.
Because at this point we had already bought some other rental properties and had to invest some of our cash into those rental properties, right?
And you had like some more kids at this point, and maybe
I think we may have. So we had one for sure at this point, I think we had our second at that point.
Yeah. So there's a little more pressure from that angle too.
Definitely a lot of pressure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I was in a pretty dark place, very, very dark. Like, depressed is a strong word, but like, you know, I'm generally not a depressed person. I don't generally have depression. But I was like on the verge of like, do I need to stop what I'm doing and go back to work or something?
Yeah.
It was tough, and it definitely, I'm thankful that I went through that experience because it helped me grow in my faith, and I'll explain that in a minute. So we finally got an offer on the house. We were going to lose, I think we lost like over $40,000 on it. But interestingly enough, before we got the offer, we were like, okay, let's sell our Airbnb because we can make a profit off the Airbnb. And it was just hard for us to manage too. We were self-managing it. It was tough. It was tough to do from being 3 hours away, right? So my wife and I talked, and we're like, all right, let's just sell the Airbnb. That'll release some stress, and you know, hopefully we'll get some cash to, you know, kind of offset this loss.
Yeah.
And this is where like my faith, because I believe that God has a plan, everything in plan and in place for me. It's really tough for us to trust in that a lot of times, especially as an entrepreneur. You're like, all right, where's my next deal? What's going on? You know, what's happening?
Right. You like to control everything.
I do. I like to control. There's a lot of that questioning between me and God. Like, I'm trying to trust you here, but what is going on, you know, with this property? So before we were under contract on the house that we were losing money on, we put the Airbnb up on the market. We ended up getting an offer on the house that we lost money on and on the Airbnb. So we were under contract on both. And they both we've sold and settled on them on the exact same day.
Wow.
Which to me is like mind blowing. Like God yeah. really had this in plan, right? Like right, that was right. not an accident. Yeah. And the proceeds from the one house that the Airbnb that we sold and yeah. the loss from the other house yeah. that we flipped,
the flip,
were almost like a net even. Like, so we almost broke even.
Wow.
So we lost like, you know, 40 some thousand on the one and we gained like 40 some thousand on the sale of the Airbnb. So that to me is another testimony.
It's a huge blessing. I mean, yeah, it could have been like, so much worse.
Obviously, you know, if I didn't lose the 40 or 50,000, like that would have been nice, right?
That would have been great. Sure.
But it has helped me. It helps me even today. I think back to that time often mm-hmm. when something's not going the way that I want it to go.
Yeah.
Is that, hey, there's a plan that is set in place and I may not know or see what that plan is. Mm-hmm. until after it happens. And I think absolutely. I try to use that in all facets of my life, not mm-hmm. just in business.
Love that.
So that was hard. That was tough.
Yeah.
I'm glad I went through it because it has helped me grow
right.
to where I am today.
So now you're seeking out more adversity.
Yeah, that's right. I just look for bad deals to buy because I want it to grow me, you know?
I want to be so much more thankful. But so a couple of quick questions because we're about out of time and I do have some rapid fire questions for you too.
Sure.
But did you consider, I'm sure you did, but consider renting out the second property, the flip?
I did. I mean, I looked at all different options. I was like, okay, yeah. if I rent it out, how much? Because I was going to lose money each month if I rented it out.
Uh-huh.
But I'm like,
gotcha.
Is it worth, I like to look at all different angles. I was like, okay, yeah. is it worth losing, you know, $500 a month or whatever it was
right.
going
like
to be.
Spread out that loss.
Spread
over
out
time.
The loss, right? Or yeah. is it better to lose 40 grand at once?
Right, right.
And I was on the verge of saying I'd rather just lose 500 a month because I can stomach that. If I mm-hmm. had millions and millions of dollars in the bank, a 40 grand yeah. loss is no big deal, right? But I'm still, right. I was still a newer, and I'm still new today, right? As a newer entrepreneur, it's harder to stomach those things, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, the thought crossed my mind. It just didn't make sense. And when the offer came in, it was like, okay, let's just cut our losses yeah. and move on.
Well, the other thing I want to point out too is for the real estate investor out there who's looking for deals, you don't know what the seller has going on. So in this case, Mark had, you know, a lot of things going on that had nothing to do with that short-term rental. Yes, the short-term rental, the craftsmanship was less than desirable from your contractor. And, you know, yes, you made money on the deal. Like, yes, you were self-managing. But like the property itself, it sounds like, was in a good location and is still a good investment, you know, for somebody. What I'm saying is they don't know about your other deal that is really taking your focus away from the short-term rental. And so people say like, why would the seller, there must be something wrong with this, with the seller selling this, you know, it's like, well, they may need to sell for some other reason. And I know you buy deals at a discount all the time. So you know this as well as anyone, but it doesn't mean that there's just something inherently wrong with this property is my point.
Right.
Is you're whoever bought that deal from you, really solved a big problem for you.
Absolutely.
And you know, and it wasn't just because that of that property by itself. So there's a lot of factors that go in. There's a human element and there's a Mark's personal story and the family elements and all this that plays into this that particular deal that you sold. So you know, when people say, well, why is this guy selling this? There must be something wrong with it. Well, he might just need to sell for reasons completely unrelated to the property itself. And I shouldn't just say
there's always a form of motivation. You just got to figure out what it is. My motivation was I need to sell this because I need to offset this other loss.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
But, you know, somebody else who's selling might have a completely different motivation.
Yeah. So if you look at the Deep Creek experience, those two deals as a whole, what were one or two of your biggest lessons learned?
Focusing on like having a laser focus on what you're trying to achieve, because I'll tell you, as soon as I sold those properties, I felt like my business was so much more healthy or like successful.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I mean, it just was a very big distraction because number one, it was so far away. It was hard to get, like, I, as an entrepreneur, I'm like, let's get stuff done. Like if I have to go do it myself, I'll go do it. But I'm not going to drive 3 hours to go change a light bulb or something. Right. Whereas if I have a property in Baltimore, I'll just drive, you know, however far and change something really quick if I absolutely need to.
Yeah.
So I think I got distracted and was trying to do maybe too many things at once. And I wasn't fully submersed into my own market before I started to go try to tap into another market.
Right.
And I think that was a mistake that I made. And, you know,
I think it's a common.
Yeah, it was
common entrepreneur.
It was kind of bittersweet selling the Airbnb because it was like, you know, a place that I like envision our family going to for years to come. Right. And it's like, okay, we're going to pay this down. It's, you know, we're going to have this for however many years, but in hindsight, it was the best thing that we ever did in terms of getting rid of it, just because it kind of relieved a lot of stress. It helped us offset that loss. And we learned a lot of lessons kind of moving forward.
Well, you still have time to get another Deep Creek property. You're only what, 36, you said tomorrow. All right. Are you ready for rapid fire questions?
Let's go.
All right. What is one thing that people misunderstand about you? This one's a tough one.
Misunderstand about me. I don't know. I think sometimes I've always looked young. I don't know if this is a good answer, but I'm just going to go with it. I've always looked really young, right? And so I think people look at me. I've had so many comments over the years of like, oh, wow, like you look so young to be, you know, doing this or doing that. Like, I don't know how old people think I am, but part of it's like, I can't grow facial hair. Right. So like, this is like a week worth of facial hair for me. So
did that for the podcast?
I did. Yeah. Specifically, you know, I wanted to look a little older. So I think people maybe, have some sort of preconceived mindset of you know who I am, because it's like, oh, this, you know, this 10-year-old,
like
is...
how much knowledge you should have at this point. If you could give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
Don't smoke so much weed. I think just taking action. Like, I honestly think that taking action is one of the biggest things that people miss about doing anything. And for instance, like, you know, people will say, oh, I'm praying that God will provide X, Y, and Z for me. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's great. But he's not going to do that for you if you don't take the action, right? Like, I heard this quote, it was from Andy Andrews has a book. What's it called? The Seven Decisions.
Okay.
Do you know Andy Andrews?
I haven't read that one, no.
He also wrote The Traveler's Gift, which is really a book.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a fun book to listen to. It's kind of like a story, right? But anyway, in The Seven Decisions, he makes the comment, and I think he's a Christian as well. God promises to provide for the bird, right? That's a scripture. In scripture it says, you know, he provides for the sparrow or whatever.
Yeah.
But he doesn't promise to put the worm in the nest. So nice. I took that. I'm like, that is like so good, right? Like, you have to take the action for him. Like, you can pray all you want, but if you're not taking action, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife and I are working through the Chosen series, and Jesus and the disciples definitely took a lot of action. That's for sure. What is one or two books that you could recommend besides the ones you've already mentioned?
It's funny. I thought about that as I was coming on, because I was like, if he asked me, I'm gonna recommend The Traveler's Gift or The Seven Decisions.
Nice.
But
okay.
I would say either one of those books, or I go back to Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's probably not the greatest book I've ever read, but it was a good book, and it's what kind of started my whole mindset shift, right?
Yeah.
And mindset is everything to me. I constantly have to work on my mindset every day about, you know, what am I thinking? What am I trying to achieve? Things like that. So I always go back to that book as one of my go-tos. Or any Bigger Pockets book. They're all good.
Yeah. And my book, right?
Or I was going to say, there's a book right in the background right there that's phenomenal.
From Adversity to Abundance. That's what you meant to say.
Yeah, sorry. I failed that question. My bad.
Wrong. What is one thing that you've seen in real estate investing that's controversial or potentially unethical, just broadly speaking?
Yeah, I think there are some investors. I think house flippers get a very, like, get a bad rap. You know, it's like, oh, this house was flipped. It must be trash.
Right.
And that's, and that, I mean, that is the case for some, like,
sure.
You know, there are some flippers who I've heard it's like, okay, you know, there's rotted wood in the walls, cover it up with drywall, you know.
Leave it. Yeah.
Yeah. Leave it and just hope nobody notices. So, but to me, like, I don't care if it costs me more money. I would rather fix those things because of who I am, right? I don't want to sell somebody, even if they're never going to know or never going to see it. I don't want to sell somebody a house like that, right? So I think there's an easy, it's easy for real estate investors and entrepreneurs to get caught up in, like, I gotta have more of this. I gotta have more of that. I gotta have more of this. Mm-hmm. And maybe to, like, you know, screw somebody else over just to, like, help yourself.
Sure.
Now, that's not to say, like, most of the people in our real estate field, like, it is kind of like it's a large group, but it's kind of a small community. Like, mm-hmm. most of the people are helpful. So I don't want to say that, you know, give all these people a bad rap. I'm just saying,
right.
if there was something negative, it would kind of be those types of things.
I mean, fortunately, there's a low barrier to entry to become a quote unquote real estate investor. And that can take on many, many shapes and sizes, but therefore, and same thing in the mortgage note space where I'm more focused, there's some shady people. And yes, it's probably less than 5% of the group, but there are ripple effects. But so looking forward in the real estate investing space, you know, whether we're talking Maryland or just broadly, what are some emerging challenges that you see for real estate entrepreneurs moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think the change in the market potentially, it's still pretty good today. I mean, I've seen it depends on the area. So, like, when COVID first hit, and I find myself lucky because I feel like I got in at a good time, right? Because right when I got in, it was like houses were selling over asking and everybody was waiving inspections, and that type of stuff is still happening today.
Mm-hmm.
But in specific areas, right? So, like, I had a house in the city recently that sat on the market for like 4 months. Nice house, like decent renovation, just the price point was higher and it was surrounded by other the neighborhood was nice, right? But you go one block over and it's like not a nice neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a challenge moving forward even for me, like trying to figure out like what is the market doing? It's just a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
But I do also think that brings opportunities because I think that people are going to be nervous. People are always nervous and scared about the market, right? Especially like with like the election coming up and stuff like that. I don't want to get into politics, but that type of stuff affects the market sometimes, right? And so for me, like I'm definitely making sure that when I'm analyzing deals, I'm giving myself a good margin. I'm still making offers, still trying to buy properties. Just you got to buy right. To make it work,
be a little more careful. Makes total sense. So who should reach out to you? Who are you trying to connect with? I know you deal with hard money lenders, private lenders. You need a lending source in general, and you need deal flow. Those are kind of, and obviously you need subcontractors and things to do the deals, but who are you trying to serve, and who should connect with you?
Yeah. And I didn't talk about this that much, but I do want, like, I want to bring, it's part of the reason, like, why I was excited to come on the podcast. I want to bring value to anybody, right? Bringing value. There have been so many investors that have brought me value, and I want to return that favor to whoever, right? So anybody who's a new entrepreneur or trying to get into the real estate field, I'm happy to answer any questions or help them out in any way I can. And I'm always trying to make connections with other private lenders, which private lenders are like just, you know, regular individuals, like, you know, your uncle or friend or whoever. to invest with me. I always want to make connections with other wholesalers. And it's not just about like, what can I get from you? It's like, hey, how can we work together? Like if you're a wholesaler, you bring me deals. You bring me value by bringing me deals. I bring you value by buying your deals, right? So it's kind of like a circle of value type thing.
Sure. No, I love it. I mean,
anybody who wants to reach out to me, you know, I've been doing this for 4 years, so I still have a lot of room to grow, right? And sometimes when I'm in a room with other higher level entrepreneurs, I'm like, man, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
But then when somebody who doesn't know anything talks to me, I feel like I have so much information to share with
them.
Yeah,
you forget how much you've learned.
Yeah, and, right? So,
and you've been doing, I mean, yes, actively 4 years, but, you know, like I said, you've been in construction most of your life. You've worked for investors and entrepreneurs most of your life before becoming one yourself. And so you've been involved in real estate and construction for longer than 4 years, but absolutely. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. There's always a ton more to learn and somebody that's way ahead of you, but we forget, you know, I do mentorship in mortgage note investing, and sometimes I forget that, you know, some of the questions I'll get are, how do I start an LLC? I'm just like, oh, I forgot that's a thing that you have, like, you know, that's important, right? And yeah, then how do I get a bank account? Oh, I need to get an EIN from the IRS before I can get a bank account. That's right. You know, these little things that you might take for granted, depending on how far along you are. And also your path is very different from somebody else's, like you said before. So you're going to have, even if someone's 10 years in and you're only 4 years in, you're going to know things that person doesn't know. So right. We can all help each other. And I can tell from the Facebook groups that I've seen you in that you're always trying to add value and make it a mutually beneficial scenario so you can grow with others. And that's what we need more of. I mean, capitalism and entrepreneurship gets a bad rap because of a few bad apples, but ultimately right. We're trying to add value, like you said, and flippers generally speaking add value to a neighborhood and add value to everyone they come in contact with. So awesome. Well, Mark, where can our listeners reach out to you? Where can they find you online?
Yeah, we don't have a massive social media presence. I mean, I'm on.
Well, now this episode's out, so that's going to change.
Right. Yeah, it's going to, you know, go. We're going to go from one follower to, you know, two. yeah. So you can reach out to me on Facebook. I have, you know, my own Facebook, but we also have a
and spell your last name.
PASSERELLI. So you can reach out to me on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram as well. Phoenix Estates is the company name. And
why'd you pick that name?
It's a faith-based thing for me. So I have a tattoo of a phoenix, and I was trying to think through like so the this is kind of a long story, so I'll try to be as short as I can. The phoenix to me is like a revitalization of my faith, right? So like the phoenix, like it dies and it turns into ashes, and from the ashes comes a new phoenix, a new bird, right? And it's renewed and restored. And that's kind of how I feel like my faith, like, yeah, I had this faith, but then I kind of had to like die to myself, and like from the ashes, like God brought me out of those things. And so that means a lot to me.
Sure.
And I was trying to, like, as I was coming up with the company name, I was like, how can I incorporate my faith? Because ultimately, like, that's one of my main goals is to share my faith with people, right? And so it kind of works into like revitalizing houses, right? Like I'm taking these houses that are kind of like trashy, most of them, and turning them into, you know, trying to better the community by fixing up houses.
Love that.
And,
I had a guy who worked for me for a long time. Stephen Berkey, and he had his company name was Phoenix Notes, and I never asked him why it was called that. So I'll have to follow up and ask him. But I'm glad I asked you.
One last thing I wanted to say, I was thinking about is in terms of mindset, is I think exercise is severely underrated. Like
Absolutely.
With mindset. And because, and I'll tell you why. So I used to work for, like we talked about before, a higher end remodeling company, right? A lot of these people were pretty successful.
Yeah.
And I noticed that because you're in their house a lot, you get to know who they are, right?
Right.
Most of them had some sort of exercise routine, like they would go to the gym or whatever. And it kind of like, I was like, why is that? Okay. The act of exercise doesn't make you successful.
No,
but it primes your mind and gives you a routine of doing something. And I'm an athlete. I've been on and off like exercising, right? But I, over the last like 3 or 4 or 5 months, I've been like really exercising a lot more. Mm-hmm. And if especially in the morning, it primes mm-hmm. my mind for the day, right?
Love
so
that.
I would just say, if you're newer to entrepreneurship and you're not exercising, or even if you are an entrepreneur and you're not, I would highly recommend, and I don't honestly do it even for that long. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's like 30 minutes. Sometimes it's 20 minutes, right? But it's like some sort of exercise, lifting weights and running that just gets me going. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
And I probably need to weave in a more intentional set of questions about, tips for mental fitness, but couldn't agree more. It's, I won't get into it too much, but I've been pretty heavily focused on mental health in the last couple of years, not just for me, but for various reasons. But exercise consistently is top three in just contributing factors to healthy mental conditioning and relationships, exercise, diet, I think are the mm-hmm. three that kind of are always there, but I couldn't agree more. It's like, even if you don't want to do it, it doesn't mean you should, sleep is critical too, but I've been doing a cold plunge in the morning now. And
I'm all about the cold plunge.
It's
every
so
morning.
Good. Every morning. Every morning. And there's some mornings it's easier than other mornings. And some mornings it's just a matter of, it's much more of a mental thing than anything else. I'm like, no, I'm in charge. I am in charge, and I'm getting in this cold plunge right now.
Yeah.
And it's only been a few weeks since I got it, but oh man, it's been great. And
I've been doing it consistently for about a year, and
that's awesome.
It's like everybody laughs at me, and I've been taking more cold showers now than baths, because uh-huh. it's easier for me to, because with the bath I have to like fill up the tub, and it just takes a longer period of time.
Yeah.
But the cold showers, it is so revitalizing. Like you get out, it's absolutely. Awful getting in, right? But when you get out, you feel so good. And I think Tony Robbins, I think I heard something that Tony Robbins said, where he's like, he's training his mind to do something right away in the morning that he doesn't want to do.
Right.
And he's training his mind to just do it without thinking. Like you don't sit there and like contemplate, should I get in the cold shower or the tub? I don't know. I don't even think about it. I get in, I turn it on, and it's like, woo.
Yeah, he's been doing it for years, and
so I would recommend that as well. It sounds goofy, but it works.
Right, absolutely. And just so you know, I am going to play pickleball here in a little over an hour, so I'm getting my exercise in.
I'm all about some pickleball, man. That's an old man sport, I thought.
exactly. It's way more fun than I expected it would be, but. Mark Passarelli, this has been awesome, my friend. This has been great. Thanks for joining us and sharing, opening up about the loss in Deep Creek. But really so much more than that, more about your faith and overcoming, I guess, your own personal negative thoughts and beliefs and things and just reconnecting with your faith and how that's contributed to your success. I think there's so many other things I could point out, but those are some key highlights that I got from this episode. And I know our listeners got a lot as well. So thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And to the listener out there, please check out our website, adversity2abundance.com. That's the number 2. And we love 5-star reviews, and we love it when you share episodes with your friends and family. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversity2abundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
All right, here's the deal. You work hard for your money. Isn't it about time you put your money to work for you? If you are an accredited investor, check out LabradorLending.com. Our Integrity Income Fund provides monthly cash flow from an investment backed by hard physical real estate. Our income fund, which is uncorrelated to publicly traded stocks and bonds, invests in first lien mortgage notes diversified by geography, property value, and borrower type. So you're not investing in one project. You're investing in a diversified portfolio of first lien mortgage notes. Our Integrity Income Fund aims to pay its investors monthly distributions at a preferred rate of return of 8% annually. Possibly the best part, though, the fund showcases a short 12-month commitment. So you can invest your capital today and have access to that capital in 1 year. Check it out today, LabradorLending.com.